Insight. We're here on Tuesday, May the 18th, 2010, and we're recording Elsie Faye and Bill Rush, along with their daughter, Barbara, and we're recording their memories of Coppell and their family. So, guys, let's start out. Elsie Faye, you tell me who your mother and father were.
My mother was, her maiden name was Knight, and she came from Alabama, and my dad was, her name was Burl Knight, and my dad came from, originally, down Volcita, Oklahoma, and his name was Austin Smith, and they ended up going to school together, I think, somewhere in Oklahoma, and met, and there's three of us kids. I had a brother, older brother, 8.5 years older, and his name was Joe, and then I had one younger sister, Venera. She's 6.5 years younger than I am. And I grew up in Oklahoma, went to school at Bennington, Oklahoma, graduated from there. Then came to Dallas to go to business school. Met him at Fair Park.
Met him at Fair Park, what?
Yeah, I had met a girl when I came to Dallas. I went to live with a rich family, the Cohen family. And we worked for, girls would come and room and board and take care of their kids. And there was a girl that came a week later from Blue, Oklahoma. And our hometowns were real close. So the day she came, one of the teachers came in and got me out of class and introduced us because they were putting her in a home a block from me out in Dallas. So we went to Fair Park one Sunday and we met Bill. She had gone to school with Bill in Blue, Oklahoma. So that's how I met him.
At the fair.
Uh-huh.
At the fair.
Yeah, it's a fair park.
It was just the park.
Uh-huh.
It's where they have the fair every year, but that went all year.
Uh-huh.
When we came to Dallas, that was open all year. They had Ferris wheels and everything all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where people went for entertainment. They had miniature golf and all that out there. So that's where we met. And
what year was that you met?
1945. And we got married May the 4th, 1946.
And Bill, who were your parents? Where did they live?
Well, my mother was a Thornton. And, of course, my dad was a Rush. He's one of the Rush boys. He always told me, he said, there's five of us boys. And we've all got five sisters apiece. Man, I'd... Five boys, and they all got five sisters apiece. You can see how I try to multiply that out. And, of course, my grandmother, Grandpa Thornton, lived there at Blue, Oklahoma.
And is that B-L-U-E?
Yes, B-L-U-E. There's a river. There's a river that goes through the country. It crosses the highway right there close to the town of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And people would get you mixed up if you lived on the river or in town.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I went to school, was at Blue.
And how did you find your way to Dallas?
Ooh, I think the best I remember, I sold my dad. I had a cow and a calf that I had more or less kind of claimed for myself. So I sold him that cow for $50. And I went to Durant, Little D, and I caught a bus to Big D down in Dallas. Rode the bus down. And I had a cousin that lived there in Dallas that I got some way got from the bus station to his house. And then I got to a boarding house up the street. And that's when I moved to Dallas.
And what year were you born, Bill?
1928.
Now say, when were you born?
November 5th, 1926.
So you were in Dallas working?
Mm-hmm. I went to work as soon after I got here.
What'd you do?
I went to work for Firestone Tire and Rubber over at on Exposition Avenue right at Fair Park. almost in.
He had to lie about his age.
Yeah.
You know, draft time and whatever. And finally kind of caught up with him. He got to be, well, he was younger than they thought, you know. So finally when he got around old enough, he told them his real age and whatever. Because they couldn't have hired him, you know, here. They'd known him so great.
Yeah. So you met at Fair Park, got married, and then what? Where did you live after you got married?
We lived in Dallas a while, in room. You know, we got most of it then was we got a room and kitchen privileges.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. In fact, when we got married in Dallas, there were such few boarding houses or anything that you couldn't find anything, any place. But of course, it was real small then, you know, just a very old park. And he lived down the street from where I lived. We met at Fair Park, and he called me next week, and we started dating. Well, finally, when we wanted to get married, we still couldn't. We couldn't even find a room nowhere. We looked all over town, no, nothing. And clear up till the day we got married, and we still didn't know where we was going to live. So where he lived was a widow woman, and she had a single woman living in the room with her. And then there was another bedroom downstairs, and there was two guys living in that room. So that morning, we were going to get married that evening. She said, told us that if we didn't find anything that morning, that she would move those guys, fix it, and arrange it upstairs for them. Because, you know, they just laid three or four in a room, different beds, you know, whatever, and rent them as long as they could push them in, you know, a room for them. So she moved those two guys upstairs with the other guys that lived up there, and filled me that room next to hers downstairs. And we lived there a good while, and then we moved to, got a room with kitchen. We had room and board there. And so we got a place and moved out over Oak Cliff, and, you know, with kitchen privileges and everything. And just moved around, and finally we got moved out to, decided we wanted out of town. We came out and moved to Grapevine, out there where the first high school was built out.
Mm-hmm.
What road was that going towards Fort Worth? Anyway, it was orchard and houses out there. From
now it's Highway 26. It goes
was that oldest big school.
Goes from Fort
Creighton,
Worth to,
you know,
to Grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we lived. We moved to Coppell.
And when did you move to Coppell?
December 1st, 1948, with, I think, three cars, with trailers, and one driver, Wheelis Wilson, another driver, Dub Harlan, and another one, Bill Rush.
Now, how did you know?
We moved at night.
How did you know my parents?
Betty, I don't remember. I guess she was the one looking for a job. I worked at Hardware Mutual. That's the name of the company, insurance company. And Betty was looking for. She got a job where I worked.
My aunt Betty
Harlan.
Yeah.
And we got to be pretty good friends at work. Got to coming out and visit. We came out on your first birthday, had part of your birthday cake and ice cream. And just went from there, you know. And then we started hunting a place out close, you know, out this way, towards Grapevine. And then ended up at Coppell. And we just did an awful lot of work on our house. He helped build all the time. You know, bought the land, we bought the $50 cotton crop that was on it. So Bill cleared a spot for the house, and then we just got it, you know, marked off and everything. And then when he was working on the house, it's not a lot of times we used to be helping. I picked cotton. And the gym was right down the street, you know, between our houses there.
Yeah.
So we picked that cotton, and we sold the cotton to the gym, whatever, but we didn't lose that $50 we paid, because of that we had to buy the cotton patch from the guy that, who was that man that I've forgotten?
Purple.
One of the Purples.
About how much land did you have there?
Almost a half.
And so it was the place where your house sat, which would have been on South Coppell Road, what I call South Coppell Road, fairly close to the railroad.
And Park Road that went down from Beltline to the park.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our lot was, up to that concrete
Those old rock
banister thing.
You remember the rock columns that were the entrance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what we're talking about is along South Coppell Road, a number of yards north of the railroad track on the east side of South Coppell Road, and your house would have been slightly north of those two stone pillars that marked the west entrance to the park.
Right.
Okay, I'm saying all this for the record.
We had a circle drive. Yeah. That park road was part of our circle drive.
Uh-huh.
See, we had our garage come in here, in and out that park road.
Right. So you built a house there, cleared the land, built a house, and moved in. You were in the house
That was when we moved in December 1st, 48.
48.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think it took you to build your house? You got it ready to move in?
I'm going to guess 5 or 6 months.
Yeah,
but I'm guessing. I know Willis and I built the biggest part of it ourselves.
No, when it started, it was only half of the house, right?
Two rooms.
Well, we just built
two rooms
to start with, and then...
No, it wasn't no bathroom, it was just two rooms.
And a path. We had the two rooms and a path that went out back to the outhouse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
To the outhouse.
Went down between two cotton rows out to the outhouse back.
And
back
at that time, Chick Van Bever owned the tank, the water tank, and there was no outside like the lines that runs from house to house.
Uh-huh.
People just hooked over to the next door neighbor, And there wasn't any meters or anything.
Now tell me about that. That's one of the things I never found out. Before there was a city water supply, you say Jake Van Bever owned?
Jake Van Bever owned the water supply.
Where? And where was it located?
Down there at Old Coppell.
You know where the wash pier was?
You know
where the wash pier
was?
So the elevated tank?
Yeah.
So he owned it.
Yeah.
And people could tap onto that by tapping to the...
Well, you didn't... I don't know where it started, the first part started, whoever was closest, I guess. But, when we built our house, there was nothing on it, but it stopped over Pete Salmon, living next door to Pete Lucille. And so we just hooked onto the end of their line and brought it across, and they charged a flat fee. It was $5 or $10 a month that you paid flat fee. You paid, I think, $25 to hook up and hook on. That kept kind of the tank, whatever maintenance they had.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think $5, maybe $10.
That was interesting because I was trying to figure out what my family did for water before the public water supply, and that was
it.
They had water in their house.
Wheelis did a lot of the bookwork. I don't remember just how they all worked it, but Wheelis room now did a lot of the bookwork.
That was after the water supply went in.
I know when the tank started leaking and we had to have a new tank, they sat down and figured out, well, there's so many so many families hooked on to this. The tank's going to cost us this much. So we're going to divide this amount of people into this tank, and each family paid their part, and that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
All of Coppell paid
their
part.
I hadn't intended to talk about this, but you're probably the only source of this information, because Jake's gone, and Nora's gone, and my mother can't remember, my father's gone. The public water supply that we have now, didn't go in until like the mid-50s or
something. Well, that was... let me try my memory now. Dallas County, Coppell, Fresh Water Supply District, number 14?
I don't remember the name of that.
Let's see. That's what it was created as, Dallas County, Coppell, Fresh Water Supply District.
And,
of course, I was on the board. Willis was on the water board. And I can't remember, George
Corbin
was on the board.
And that's when you got a new well and stopped using the overhead tank.
Well, we got a deep well.
And do you remember the year that happened?
I can't. I'm going to say it was in the early 50s, but I can't remember exactly what year.
And before that, you had this system that Jake Van Bever owned.
Was just a regular old Biloxi well.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't checked, no chemicals.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah.
It was the best water we ever had. Oh,
yeah.
It was soft water and
yeah.
really good.
Good drinking water.
So that was the source for the washateria?
Yeah.
Everything. The laundry? Everything.
Yeah.
How long did that exist? Do you remember when?
I don't know exactly. It was still there when... It was still there when they were little, because I still, at that point, I didn't have a washer, and I still went to the...
I can remember barely being
yeah.
very small,
yeah.
and my mother going up there. She had a washing machine very early, because that's the kind of thing my father always bought her, but...
Yeah.
She used the washateria once, or maybe her washing machine had gone out or something.
Yeah.
I remember being up there once. And I seem to remember the TDs running it.
TDs?
I don't know. That could be wrong. But the building stayed a while until, I think, till Les Schaefer tore it down. But I don't know.
I can't remember who the last ones were. I know Lori.
I didn't know if
Johnson,
the water supply and that had anything to
what
do with...
What was the John
along that
man?
Existed? I didn't remember.
What was her name?
Morgan.
No, that's Mary V. I'm talking about...
Well, let's go back to something you mentioned. Next door to you, just north of you, the house north of you, where Jimmy Harwell lived
yeah.
Yeah.
later.
Yeah.
The family that lived there when you moved to Coppell
Pete
were...
Pete and Lucille Salmon.
S-A-L-M-O-N?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Petey.
Mm-hmm.
And Lorraine, Pete, and...
No.
Lucille.
She was a
TD.
And she was a sister to Betty Parker, Herbert's wife.
Mm-hmm.
They were sisters.
Okay, and they lived there.
And, yeah, and then the next ones, I believe, was Barbara and... What's her name? Who am I trying to think of? They had a Barbara.
Well, Jimmy, the Harvels, that's
mm-hmm.
Frank and Mahala Harvel,
right,
moved
right.
there somewhere around 1954, because that's when he started school in second grade with me.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know who lived there. And we determined that that house was the house, that when that house was built, it was the banker's
house
in town. And it didn't have a, it had a, sort of a front porch on it originally. We have a picture of it somewhere, and then when I knew it, it didn't have a front porch on it.
No.
And it still had stained glass windows, you know,
uh-huh.
around.
It was a nice house when
yeah.
it was built. It was a nice
yeah. And it was, you know, that house was demolished overnight by the Baptist Foundation. Like
Green.
They did a lot of
Green
house.
Was their last name. Barbara
Green.
Green.
Barbara Green.
Yeah.
Her
oh, yeah, Barbara Green.
I can't
now, let's go, while we're talking about it, let's go, I always do this with everybody that I interview. So let's keep going north. After their house was?
Clyde Parker's
house. He had a garden. No, that
well,
would be.
Frank had a garden.
Frank
well,
Harvel had a garden.
I think, didn't Clyde have a garden?
Clyde Parker might have, had
well,
a garden.
He did. And then if you went beyond that, there was the cotton gin. Bud Parker.
Yeah.
That's the next north. Then the cotton gin,
mm-hmm.
then the little rock house,
right.
and then my
and
parents.
Then
Green
the Wheeler
and Wilson lived in that rock house for a while.
And so did my brother and a lot of people lived
in the rock house.
Yeah. And when I was a kid, I can remember the gin a little, but they tore it down pretty quickly. But the rock house stayed, and there was another little outhouse out behind back there that was part of the cotton gin, because I remember finding old checks in there and things that were part of the cotton gin.
Was it a chicken house or a real house?
No, in the house. It was like a chicken house or a shed or something. And so it was, anyway, okay. Now, didn't you help my father build, now he didn't build the original house. They moved into our house in about 1946. So they were there a year and a half before you moved to Coppell.
They
yeah.
lived there, when we first started coming out there, they lived in that, and then Miss Barbnick on the other side of them, and then Betty and Doug lived in our
mm-hmm.
other house.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was when we first started coming out there.
Right. That was just east of Miss Barbnick's house.
I helped Willis add some rooms on to the back of their house.
Right.
And I can't remember how many, but it seemed to me like it was a couple or three rooms that we built on to the back.
It was just one
original.
Just one big room and a back porch onto the back.
Onto the back.
But you probably helped him with the garage, too.
I'm sure we did.
I remember now. He did help build that screened-in porch, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
The back porch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have pictures of a lot of that. And the garage, when they moved there, was just a one-car garage.
And a wash house?
He changed it to be a wash house and a workhouse next door, and then eventually changed it to a two-car garage.
I got to tell this while we're talking before I forget it. You know, I told you we come out on your birthday. We came out to excavate and dumb. We were all at your party. And
was the party at our house?
Uh-huh. Yeah. You were a year old,
uh-huh.
1 year. And so we were there, and then a year after that, you were two when Barbara was born.
Uh-huh.
And we were together, all of, you know, even we went on picnics down there in the park and everything, you know, somebody have a, it didn't take but 5 minutes to get ready and go to the park and have a picnic, hot dogs or something. And anyway, every time one of us run the grapevine or something, you know, or sit and go get something to, for supper or whatever and come back, you would go with me and Bill anywhere.
Really?
And you were a little bitty type, you know, until Barbara was born. And you got mad at us. And you wouldn't go with us unless we left her with Ruth and Al. So when we go anywhere, we're going to take you with us. You want to go with us? We'd leave her with
Ruth
and Al.
Have to leave her so she gets to stay at
leave
my
that, house. Leave that thing
leave here. That
okay, while we're here, I want to know, when did y'all first know Miss Harlan?
As soon as we started coming. She probably more than I as far back as I can remember, when we first met the others. Because we visited, I'm pretty
they
sure
lived.
The day we come, when we started coming, we'd go visit them.
Mm-hmm.
They lived over there across the school. You know,
across
right
from the school.
And in those days, the farm was owned by the Whittakins. Don't know much about him. But my grandparents lived in Cobbell, of course, before my parents, because they were in the, my father was in the Army, and my mother was with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells a story that she got a letter from my grandmother saying, we have moved from Bloomdale, or Princeton, wherever they were, to a place called Coppell. And my mother was in Indiana or wherever she was with my father, and he was going overseas, and she was going to come back home. And my grandmother said, we've moved to Coppell. And my mother said, where the world is Coppell? And when she came back, she went to the train station in Dallas. My grandfather picked her up. She came to the house across from the school, stayed there for a while, and then moved to Dallas, just like you did, and worked for Southland Life Company. And then they bought their house when my father got out of, was discharged from the Army at the end of the war. He came back home, and because my grandparents were here, they moved here. And my Uncle Dub, Aunt Betty, and they moved here, and they lived in a rental house over on what was Fleet Road in those days. But I think that's before you knew them. And then by the time I was, I think, 6 weeks old, they bought the Blueford Ledbetter house and moved into it.
That was the nicest house in Coppell at the time.
Yeah, little bitty.
At the time, because it was new.
Yeah.
And it was about the nicest house in Coppell.
Yeah. Oh, I want to tell you something else, too, and I'm not going to call any names. You'll know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to name into it. But anyway, just before Barbara was born, it turned out, you know, and Ruben never did milk the cow or anything. And I had milked all my life. But anyway, it turned out that Wheelis and Doug and them had to go off somewhere to get somebody that was in trouble off somewhere else. And so they needed the cow milk. Well, we said, well, Bill and I, before he goes to work, we'll go down and milk the cow. So we did. We went down there and we milked. And he dropped me off back at the house. Well, it wasn't too long before she was born. Anyway, he drove off. And here I was in there from the bucket of milk. And I thought, the house is locked. And here I am. No key.
Oh, no.
So now I got it. I went around. We had one window at the back that you could raise up a little bit. I thought, I'm not going to crawl through that window. So I just hacked out down the road. They lived over, Miss Harlan was living over there across from the school at that time. I can piece things together, you know. But that's where they live, so I thought I'll just go over there and spend the morning with them or the day with them, and I'll take the milk and put it on over there. So I walked down, and back then there wasn't much traffic, you know, one or two cars passed, and I don't remember who it was. I wanted to say it was one of the Greens, but maybe not. Somebody stopped and asked if I wanted to ride. I said, no, I was just going over at Miss Farfus. Then around the road, I just walked. But that happened, you know. That would have been 48. Right out, we hadn't been living there, I don't guess, too long.
How about that?
Let me think a minute. She was born 49. That would have been the last part. Not in December. It was pretty short after we had moved there. Either that or January.
Now, Bill, where did you work when you moved to Cop Hill?
Well, when I worked at Firestone Tire and Rubber.
So you were still working there?
Yes.
In General Dynamics.
Yeah, I worked there until...
Consolidated.
Let's see, I worked at Firestone from 45 to, to 50. And this guy came in that had been in the service, and he got a job over at Consolidated Volte Aircraft that built like B-24 and B-36s. And he came over to eat lunch with his wife one day at Firestone, and I was talking to him at lunch, and he was telling me about this aircraft place that he was working, and how much he was making, and so I got the idea. I had been at Firestone for 5 years. I had just got my 5-year pin. So I went over to Consolidated Volte Aircraft and applied for a job. And they hired me. And they hired me, and it said on the papers to replace some guy that had left, you know, there and went to the service. And I got thinking, you know, when he comes back, he may want his job back and I may have to leave. But anyway, I went to work there in 1950. And I worked there until 1990, which is 40 years.
Wow.
And at the time, from the time that I went to work there, it was Consolidated Volte Aircraft. And then they changed that it sold and it went to Convair, a division of something, I don't remember what. And then it sold again and went to General Dynamics. And it stayed General Dynamics until it was still General Dynamics in 1990 when I left.
91.
Yeah,
January
1st. And then it's changed now to, what is it?
Lockheed Martin.
And it's Lockheed Martin now. And it seems odd to me that all my retirement stuff I get now from Lockheed Martin, and I never did work for them. Mm-hmm. I worked for General Dynamics.
Right.
But I stayed there for 40 years and then retired.
Wow.
They just celebrated their 64th anniversary. They married at the ripe old age of 17 and 19.
Wow.
But I want to tell you about one little thing. If Janice was here, she would understand it more than her big brother Pete, I'm sure. But anyway, when Wheelis and I were on school board here at Coppell, we was going to a school board meeting that night, and they was also having a chili supper, you know, that you could eat out at the cafeteria.
Right.
And then the board members was going in to have a school board meeting. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to help things along, and it, you know, kind of nervous and jittery, and let's go. And Rubenel was sitting in the car, and I told Wheatley, I said, "Well, why don't y'all go in and eat, and I'll sit here with Janice with a baby, just you know, just, mm-hmm. I mean a little bitty baby." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'll hold Janice while y'all go in and eat, and then we can go to the
meeting."
Mm-hmm. And Rubenel, I wasn't looking in at her. I was just talking, you know, outside the window. And she said, "Bill, Janice is not on the bottle." So that sent me on my way.
So you decided not to do it.
I decided not to help her out.
Hey, now I'm glad you brought this up. I have not been able to find out exactly or even approximately what years my father was on the school board. Can you tell me?
Ooh.
That you guys approximately. Because it was a county school.
Yeah.
But you had a school board. And I remember it was very early.
Well, it was a county school. It was a county school. And then we went, what do you call it? We went through the building panes.
Mm-hmm.
And make it a Coppell Independent School District.
Right, and that was in, I think, 55.
When it went to mm-hmm. Coppell Independent
right.
School District. And we also had our just a grade school. Our high school kids went to Carrollton.
Right.
They went to Carrollton.
Until 1965, that's mm-hmm. when I grew.
Yeah,
well,
was
60.
First, and I was the third.
Yeah. But how long were you on the school board? Do you remember?
Ooh. I can't remember, but I can't remember.
So do you think it was somewhere around the middle 50s?
When
I was around 12 still? Mm-hmm. Huh? When I was around 12?
Yeah, it was in
there.
But I can't remember when I went
I know
on.
We stayed with
about time you started school.
Well, I started in 53. You must start in, what, 54?
55.
Yeah. And I'd say I was on there from 55 through, I'd say close to 65. I don't remember.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Were you on there that long? I know I don't think Wheelis ever got off. He was always on the water board or the...
Mainly he was on the water board, but I don't think he was on the school board up into the 60s.
But I do remember when Kay and I were around 12 that Daddy and Uncle Sammy were still on the school board. Because they had some rather interesting meetings.
I think we have yearbooks with your picture in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But my father's is. See, our first yearbook was 62.
Mm-hmm.
Was our first yearbook. Mm-hmm. And I think your picture's in that one.
Could
my
be.
Father's is not. I don't think my father. My father was on the city council.
Yeah.
But he wasn't on the school board that long.
Well, he was for a long time.
But it was a long time ago.
It was probably
further back. I think he was on the school board when I started school.
Yeah.
Because I know when we had to replace the water tank, he was the one that was doing all the figuring and everything, you know.
Yeah, but that was the water board.
Water board. And
he was more active on the water board than the city council eventually.
Yeah.
So,
well, he may have missed out on
some of y'all's yearbooks will tell
the interesting meetings for the school board then.
Yeah, because you were around when all the, well, my father was on the city council, and I guess you were still on the school board when most of the controversy
mm-hmm.
was all taking place.
When we were out campaigning.
Oh, gosh, we did it all
well,
the time.
I love that. That's one of my favorite memories.
That's
when
I was working for the city.
PA system on the...
Yeah, on the station wagon.
Yeah.
And you worked for the city, Elsie?
Yeah, let me tell you what happened.
Now, you were working for the city.
But I knew I was
Tell me how you were working for the city. What was
taxes. Bill Cosby came to the house one day unexpected. I wasn't working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the house and told me they're fixing to open up the, you know, all the city stuff, and they were going to start the tax Well, they needed a tax assessor. That's mm-hmm. what I was, tax assessor collector.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't know if I was interested in a job, so I went to work for
him. And where did you work?
The old, well, it was the old building right behind the barbershop there. You
okay.
Know.
Yeah,
you know,
with the jail.
Connected
they had
with,
the one-room jail.
With Bucky's yeah. dog pen, you remember?
Yes, yes.
Because I remember
the building's still there.
Was actually meeting. Bucky was sitting in that pen, all locked up behind the wires and watching nobody get up. He had something to somebody, might have a gun, you know.
Uh-huh.
But he sat out there where nobody could get to him, you know,
uh-huh.
watched through the windows.
Uh-huh.
All that was going on, they were fighting some of them. That was about, I think, Johnny Dobecker jumped over the table after somebody, after Johnny.
I can't remember all
yeah,
that tweet. Was that tweet's name?
Joe, yeah.
Casey.
Yeah.
Got on Bobby Parker one night
yeah.
over here to
that was
school board meeting.
Richard Lee. Richard Lee was telling me something about that because Richard
yeah.
was on school board for a long
he
time.
He came in bloody. He didn't.
Now tell me about this. This was a school board meeting and it was taking place where?
At the Coppell School.
At Pinkerton, what's now Pinkerton.
Yeah,
Pinkerton. And what happened?
This Tweet,
J.C.
Tweet, he was a big burly,
yeah.
big burly guy.
Yeah. Short-tempered.
And Bobby Parker was, let's see, what
he became assessor collector too, didn't he, Bobby
yeah.
Parker?
And he was.
He was something.
I can't remember what his official title
was. I
don't
know. They were a committee. Him and I forgot what the guy's name. And Steve.
There was some disagreement, and J.C. Sweet got a hold of Bobby Parker, and he made the blood squirt out of his nose. And it got on some of us that were sitting around there close by. And but this was all settled right there. We didn't go down to Dallas to the courthouse or anything to settle it. It was all settled right there at the school board meeting. But I had to get me a clean shirt before I could go to work the next day. So mine was pretty well blood splattered. But I remember where it come from. It come from Bobby Parker's nose. Wasn't mine.
What was Bobby? He took care of, he was over the tax stuff. I mean, he didn't do the, he wasn't.
He would have been a kind of a manager, not a.
I don't know what. Him and Doc Leslie, and I can't think of that other guy's name. Him and Bob were good friends that were on the committee that I helped him do all the cards. Went to all the property with them, and the three of them, and measure. You know, they do the measuring, but I was keeping.
And this disagreement was pretty much over taxes and
new
taxes and growth and
yeah.
spending
yeah.
city money or school
the
money.
The annexation
yeah.
and all that was
mm-hmm.
this during that part, or
yeah.
But it got so bad, you know, there that they would
go back to your right.
Yeah.
To that door and turn right. It's in front of the water fountain. Now, this was a school board meeting, though, not a city council meeting.
School board.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Bob was over some school stuff. Over.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Bob was assessor collector for the school. And you, how long did you work for the city?
About 8 years.
Really? And what happened to your job? You said you...
I got fired.
How come?
You know, there was such a big controversy. And what happened along about that time... you know, they were fighting over moving CL and Iska's house down
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And that was a big issue. They were sending petitions around and who wanted it and who didn't want it. And Sam Little was the city manager at the time. And they brought the petition, and I thought it over a little bit, and I thought, well, I shouldn't do this because I know it'll affect my job. But I am a citizen. I live up the street then, and I do not want that house. In a little slot down there, big enough to get in, all dead wood, you know, with all of our house.
The fireworks stored in it.
I know it.
And I thought, it's worth my job, and I know I'm in trouble when I do it, but I'm going to sign it. So I signed it. Sam Little saw my name on it. The first thing he said, you know, this is going to mean your job. I said, yeah, I know that. Well, next time around when they had their meeting, it's so happened, I think Bill Harville, or one of the ones that was on our side, was going to have to be out of town, wouldn't be there to vote. So they knew that the mayor would be the one to, you know, and he was for the other side, definitely. And he would always butter me, you know, try it, and I thought, you devil, you know. I know what's in the back of your mind. But anyway, it went on like that, and then we just came, at that time, there was something, really, I can't remember what it was, something about adding something on down at the other end, and it was going to cost all of us a lot, you know, to put them on, I don't remember if it was water or whatever, anyway, something over their disagreements, and so I knew that was their chance. So we just came, he called me or came on the house and told me, he said, now, it's going to be a tie, you know, that what Hugh and Scott will do. I said, yeah, I know that. He said, anyway, and...
And Hulam was mayor.
Uh-huh, was mayor, so he had the choice of, you know, breaking the tie. So I knew that. And what they needed, when they would get their minutes, they do have a meeting, they do their minutes, and then it would be typed up in the next meeting when they'd be find out what all was in those minutes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what they needed was a copy of the previous, that was going to be their meeting. They knew I'd get fired. So he came, he said, we need a copy of those minutes from last meeting. So says, I need it to get to Larry Jackson, the attorney, sent me to take it this morning. And we've been trying to figure out a way we're going to get them, you know, because they read them and they put them in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hadn't been notified, you know, that I knew I was fired. But he said, we need to come in with something here. I said, okay. I got up next morning, went down after Bill went to work. I went down there and took my key. And it just so happened we just got a copier not long before then in the police part.
Yeah.
So I went down there and got those minutes out of the safe, and went in and copied them, put them back nice and neat, and locked the door and turned the light out and went home. And went by and left him those minutes. I did this before he went to work, and took them back for him to take Larry Jackson. So they won. I mean, we won whatever, stopped whatever they were trying to do, you know, by that. And I said, that helps, you know. If I hadn't done that, they couldn't have.
Now, who actually fired you?
I guess the council, they went in their meeting, they just agreed, you know, and let's see, they fired, was it Kelly?
Kelly Story?
They fired somebody else, Mr. Scott? They fired more than me.
And they were firing people because they were on the wrong side of the issues?
Uh-huh.
Not just the house issue,
uh-uh.
But everything. Yeah. Okay, now let's get down when Barbara was born. Barbara, you were born when?
February 19th, 1949.
49. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in the house that your parents had built. Tell me about your childhood. What went on?
Hey, let's go through this. Let's tell you.
Yeah.
Well, we did have you out all day, and I'd been cleaning it and doing all this, yeah, walking him around. Well, we had been, you know, on the stroller and whatever. And I had washed, went down. We had running water, but it wasn't hot. I don't know. Anyway, I washed and rolled my hair down at Ruth and Elson. And we went on in that night. We decided to play dominoes. So about midday, we were still playing dominoes, and I said, hey, I think we better break this up. I'm going to go somewhere here, I think, after what. So we went home, and that was about 12 o'clock. And about 2 o'clock, I got up, Bill went down, got Rubenel, and Betty and Dove went to the hospital with us. And they stayed. That was about 2 o'clock when I got them up. And then about 5 or 6 o'clock the next evening before she was born. But they stayed, and then when I came to, you and Wheelis were there. He brought you. But he stayed home, kept him.
And you were probably not happy.
Yeah,
no, probably not. What hospital was this?
East Dallas. What was the name of that? It was in East Dallas on Victor.
I can't think of the whole name of it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's on your birth certificate, but I don't know. East Dallas, but it was over in East Dallas.
Yeah.
And so, Barbara, what are your earliest memories?
Earliest memories. I remember the house a little bit when it was just half, you know, the
two rooms.
Yeah, before it was built onto. You and your family. I remember Miss Harlan really well early on. You know, there's, I remember the Washateria a little bit. I don't remember the gin. I don't know when the gin
left.
Torn down. I don't remember
heavy.
That at all.
Yeah,
I don't remember
heavy.
That at all. I just remember everything being very small, you know, not all centered in around where we all lived, right
mm-hmm.
in there, and the
mm-hmm.
post office and buggies, you know,
mm-hmm.
everything just central little Falvel right there.
Mm-hmm. And your family, where did you shop? Groceries, whatever. What?
Oh, goodness. Where did we shop? I remember...
Carrollton.
Carrollton
yeah.
Hotel.
And Burris is great.
Grapevine, yeah. Yeah, I can remember what the store looked like in Carrollton.
A&P?
A&P, you got the, yeah, the coffee.
A&P.
The little... Yeah, A&P coffee.
Well, originally, A&P was on close there to the square on
uh-huh.
Main Street,
uh-huh.
and then it moved out to Josie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mother
and
went
that's
there.
That's where we went, and went to Grapevine, like she said, Burris.
Mm-hmm. And when we, I don't know how much you used the Washateria down there. I know we went to Carrollton some when she didn't
I
have
I think that was
washer.
After the one closed at Coffell that I went
okay.
to
Carrollton. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you built a garage that was unique. I can remember that. What was unique about it?
About the garage?
Yeah.
It was detached from the house. It was
but
altogether detached from the house, and it had a washroom or washing room in the back.
Mm-hmm.
That
may be what she's trying to get you to tell what happened. He wasn't going to build a wash house. And I said, you're going to build a garage, you're going to put a wash house in the back of it. And you don't need a wash house. Yes, I do. And he was just being a little bit stubborn about it. And somebody said to him, I said, well, I said, if he don't put that wash house on there, he'll never get it built because he can work all day, you know, whenever he's home, he can put up all he wants to. And next day while he's at work, I'm going to tear it down. So, and it had a shower.
In the
corner.
The
shower
back in the back. See, that's I never saw it, but somebody, I guess
uh-huh.
my parents
yeah.
told me
yeah.
that you had a shower or bathroom in that garage, and I thought that was the most.
Oh, man,
yeah.
it was nice.
I
a luxurious thing, you know?
You could go out and mow.
He always used that.
You could go out and mow or do your work
uh-huh.
around the yard,
uh-huh.
and go in the garage, turn the shower on, get in and shower, and then going about your business.
See, it was like having two bathrooms when
yes.
I just had
well,
no.
It was
working in the yard.
Sure.
Like a half bath is, you know.
And we had a heater out there, you know.
Yeah. See, you had luxury. See,
it had a hot water heater.
So regardless of what time of year it was, here he'd yeah. come, you know.
Yeah.
He'd
come in work, go out the shower. Maybe icicles didn't come off of him.
It didn't bother me then at all.
Okay, before we leave the house, tell me when you moved away from the house. You lived in that house all the time you lived in Carville.
Yeah.
You moved when?
In 1991.
And where did you move?
Arlington.
They live a mile and 2 or 3 tenths from me.
From you in Arlington. And who did you sell your house to?
The Baptist Foundation.
Baptist Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Bought it. And then they moved. They took it up, picked it up, moved it out there by the park road.
Oh.
And then they got rid of it or sent it to a place up about old past Bowie up in that neighborhood up in there somewhere that they was putting in a neighborhood and they sold those houses to them.
So they moved your house
yeah,
first?
Yeah, they moved it.
And then moved it again?
No,
no.
They just picked it up.
Oh, and waited.
Did not sit out there in that?
Sit out there for a week.
I believe you're right. I mean,
yeah, I think they did. Kind of
out there.
Just across the park.
So they were just, they picked it up
back
and then,
the
before,
long
until
long.
They.
Yeah, they own the.
Yeah,
you know,
they moved the house.
Took on to them, moved.
And the garage.
Yeah, I contacted Jimmy Harwell when they were going to do all this, and I said, just in case you might want to drive by, or just so you know.
Yeah.
They're fixing to do this.
Yeah.
And the last year I saw of it, they take it so far up the road somewhere, and I guess night, you know, they had to leave it, and they parked it somewhere, and I don't know where it went from there.
But I can remember one time, Pete, when everyone was doing some building there on the house, and the floors were pine floors, mm-hmm. and I put this stain on the floors to stain them real pretty, but it so happened that the sun shining in on that fresh paint through the window, man, that sun kind of puddled that fresh stain on the floors, and it looked terrible.
The stain was ruined, huh? They even got some jet splatters around somewhere. It looked like a real old dark brown paint, not
varnish. So anyway, I was going to have to sand that off. You couldn't, no way you could get it off, so I was going to have to sand it off. So I went down to one of these places where you rent all this sanders and whatever kind of machinery you need on Harry Hine Boulevard, and I rented this sander that you could sand floors, whatever you wanted to do, and at the same time, Wheelis said, well, you know, I'm going to change the floor in my kitchen. I pull up the tile or
linoleum
and said, I need to refinish under that. So let's just do them together. So let's just do that. So I picked up the sander when I came by from work one evening there on Harry Hines Boulevard and got a bunch of the sandpaper. Came home, and me and Wheelis went to work on our living room where we was sanding at the house. And we sanded on that, sanded all that junk off and had it real pretty. Got through at midnight. Then we loaded the sander up, and we go down to the Wilson house, and he's already had to linoleum pulled up and the floor ready to sand, and we started work on that, sanded that floor. So we worked all night. But we finished it up and I loaded the sander in the car and whatever sandpaper had left. And on the way to work that day, I took it by, dropped the sander off and the sandpaper and paid the people, and Wheelis and I had worked all night long.
And so it was a weeknight. You had to go to work the next morning?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't pay no attention to that. That was just something that had to be done.
I remember something else unusual about your house, the front porch.
Uh-huh.
One wall of the porch had wood paneling or something on it.
It had,
you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Knotted pine. Knotted pine paneling,
yeah.
Or knotted pine board, but it had varnish over it. This is where it looked natural.
Mm-hmm. Remember, when you drive by, your house is always unusual because you could see that wood on the
knotted pine.
Now, let's talk about the other side of your house. And Barbara, you help me out here. When you moved there, there must have been a little train depot there.
Little what?
Train depot building. Little train depot building.
Up at the railroad?
Yeah, on the railroad.
I don't remember that. You've heard me talking about Dwayne, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I don't remember
care
that.
She worked for the depot, you know?
Who?
Clayda Harwell.
Clayda Harwell, yes.
And she walked up there every day, you know, mm-hmm. and did paperwork, checked something, you know, the train would stop there.
Right.
And Bill's brother was there. He had just got out of high school. I guess he was high school. Anyway, he was there, and he had been, I think, to the store, and he'd always, when he'd walk down the store, he'd take Barb with him. She used to baby, you know, little thing. And he'd take her with him. Mm-hmm. Well, he come in, they'd been to the store and on the way back, and he come running in at the back door, and he said, hey, I said, look at that car going there. I said, do you know those people? I said, yeah, why? He said, they stopped and wanted to take Barbara with them, and I let them
And who was it?
They were just going up to the depot.
But
he no more knew who they were. And he said, well, I figured it's all right because they knew her.
But
thank heavens.
This was the a small depot, a fairly small, two rooms, I think, or something.
I don't remember.
Were you ever in it?
Not that I remember, no.
Yeah. That depot, the reason I ask is the depot, of course, is a very important company. But that's the second depot that was ever there. The first one, of course, was a very large one. I should show you a picture before you leave. It gave the town its name, Coppell.
Now, did it sit in the same spot?
Mm-hmm, we think so. And I'll talk to you later about that, but about the name Coppell and all that, so y'all ask me to remind me to tell you about that later. I remember being on the outside of that depot. The train didn't stop, but as I can remember, when I was a kid. But remember my cousin Gee, Pat?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She came to visit, and I had a dog named Blondie, a Cocker Spaniel, and we went up walking, went up to that depot and sat there, and Blondie was on a rope, had her on a rope, and this train came barreling through,
yeah.
You know, and there was a sitting area outside, or in a little...
A seat.
It was outside, but it was enclosed, and you sat facing the train going by,
mm-hmm.
And I remember I was scared to death because... as that train went rushing by, she would try to get loose and
yeah.
run. I'd think, she's going to kill herself running
yeah.
to that train.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I remember being at that depot. Because they remember what happened to it? When it was no longer used, they sold it to the Kirkland. Terry Kirkland's parents bought it. They
right.
held a chicken farm over west of town.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved it out there. And they used the right-hand side for candling eggs. And the left-hand side was his model train collection.
Yeah.
And he was 2 years older than I was.
Yeah.
So, what, three older than
mm-hmm.
you? He was a friend of mine when I was little,
yeah.
and I was there. But anyway, that was the depot story. We need to talk about first of all, anything else you remember? Well, Barbara, before we do that, tell us about what you remember about starting school. Anything
at all?
Well,
I remember before I started school, when I went to school one day with you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell me about
that. Was that when Deborah was born, Mother?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when my cousin was born in May, I got to go to school with you for the day and be
really?
A visitor.
So I was in the first grade, I guess.
Yeah, I went to the hospital with Venera, and Ruvenella told me to bring her down.
And this would be Venera Plumbly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I took her on the way out to the hospital. I took her and stuck her in the back door.
And you know, today we couldn't
really
do that. School.
Uh-huh.
Just go and be
yeah.
a visitor.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got to go and be a visitor with you that day.
And that was Miss Shockey's class.
Mm-hmm.
You remember what went on? What happened?
I remember the chairs. Did y'all still have the chairs where you had the seat in the front at that time?
Yeah.
I want to say there was some of those.
Folded up.
The one, yeah. The different kinds of desks that they used to have. The
uh-huh.
old-timey
uh-huh.
desk, I remember some of those. I just thought I was a big kid, I don't know. But then I was growing up, being an only child and 2 years younger than everybody, I was either, if there was me and one other, it was good. If there was me and two others, I was the third wheel. Or I got to be the one, the guinea pig for whatever. Or, you know, whatever the situation.
Uh-huh.
But it was always good. The small school was good, you know, growing up there. I tell people now that sometimes it comes out of my mouth that I had to do things because it was so small and there was so few of us to do everything.
Uh-huh.
And I say, nope, back up. I got to do these things. I had the privilege of doing these things because we were such a small place.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to experience a lot. Sometimes there were a lot of activities to participate in, but then we got to do it all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We got to go out and campaign. We got to do
mm-hmm.
stuff that kids nowadays...
That was fun.
I don't know. It was, the campaigning.
You're talking
kids,
about campaigning for city council.
Yeah, most kids nowadays don't take that interest. We
mm-hmm.
got doors slammed in our faces. We did it all.
Uh-huh.
We did the full campaign thing. Had the loudspeaker going on the top of the car going through the big city of Coppell.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, growing up can't be better than that. You
That's
know?
Right.
So
That's
we spent days at Sandy Lake Park. Jimmy Harville and his companion, his good friend was it Superman flying off
oh,
the building?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
you know, it was just a fun place to grow
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Small city, so.
So when you started school, was Ms. Shockey your first grade
mm-hmm.
teacher?
Yeah.
She was.
And Miss Dozier, second grade?
Phillips.
Miss Phillips.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your teachers were Miss Shockey, Miss Phillips.
Don't ask me to go through the whole row.
Don't remember them.
No, can't go through the whole row.
I can't.
Miss
Hanley. You had Miss Hanley.
Yeah.
Miss Willie. Did you have
Miss
Willie?
That's the one I was grabbing for. Had Miss Willie. She taught me one of my greater lessons in life. Miss Willie did. And I guess it's one I can actually thank her a great deal for. When my great-grandpa, I don't know if you remember him coming to stay with us sometimes when he was sick or he'd go from a cousin's house to our house. Well, at this point, he was sick. He lived in Terrell, and we would go a lot of nights to Terrell to visit him, which was a, with the roads back then, it wasn't a small trip.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to Mamaw and Papaw's in Oklahoma on some weekends. We had this long project to complete, and I carried it with me everywhere I went. I believe it was a math project, long term. I did it. I worked on every problem. I did the whole thing. Everywhere I went, I had those, that with me. And I completed it, turned it all in, and someone else, I won't name who, but anyway, someone else turned in blank pages and got the same grade from Miss Willie that I got. Taught me a great deal. So I can actually thank her for that. At the time, I don't think I was too pleased.
Yeah.
But it was a good lesson in life.
Did she know what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She gave him a passing grade for
Did you have Miss Ashley?
No? I had Miss Ashley.
I can't wish
Miss Ashley left early because she got pregnant and had to leave.
What did she teach?
Maybe fourth or fifth grade for me.
I can't remember much of it. Just the name is all that sticks in my mind.
I had to reconstruct all that. I have written what I loosely call my memoirs.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know her or not, but my mother's, did I tell you about the property in the city, my mother's property and all that? Well, the long story is, the short story, long story made a little shorter is, when we were looking for a place to put the Kirkland house, you know, Jack Kirkland's house, the oldest house in Coppell, built in 1904, Jim Witt was city manager, and we thought, we had a grant to buy the house, the land, because it had to be moved. But we didn't have a place to move. I'm talking about the Historical Society. The Historical Society got a grant to pay for the land, the house, and to move it. Didn't have a place to move it. And we thought it was going to get moved by the city to the part of Grapevine Springs up near the road. And while we were waiting for all this to happen, Jim Witt, the city manager, called me and said, "You've already let us move the Thwaite windmill onto your corner. Would you let us move this house then?" So I said, yes. So they moved the Kirkland house there, and at the same time, by coincidence, they moved the Minyard store there, which was given to the city. Mm-hmm. And we made a deal, a written deal with the city, that they could move those two buildings there and the windmill, and this property's still ours. They pay their prorated share of taxes on that property. They pay back my mother for that share of the taxes all the time. It's there. And someday, when we no longer need that land, the city is obligated to buy the entire lot, but they are obligated to keep her house. They can't tear her house down. So we think it'll be a museum someday.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole little area will be, her house will be a museum,
yeah.
And then you'll have the Kirkland house, the windmill, and the Minyard store. And so we've made that deal with them. Let's hope it holds up.
Yeah, I knew you were working on something.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And so, anyway, how did I get on that subject? I don't know. We did all that. We've come a long day, a long way from the old days.
Do you remember the snow cone stand?
Oh, yes.
They used to set out.
And the fireworks
stand. Fireworks and Halloween.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about. I've written my memoirs. Because I felt like I needed something in writing that would be first to remember what our house was like,
mm-hmm.
because most likely someday, when I'm gone, they're going to want to restore that house to maybe the way it looked in the 50s or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I started collecting pictures and memories and things about it, and I've written well over 100 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is my memories of the house and mm-hmm. living in Coppell, things that went on, you know, up until about the 90s, things like that. And so I mentioned your family, of course, because I did know that you helped my father build what we call the back room.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped you on your house. I remember
about
that. Yeah.
We swapped out.
One of them had anything to do. They just needed some help.
Yeah.
Right.
We didn't we didn't go hire somebody to do this or that.
Sure.
We helped each other.
Sure.
And we just helped me a lot.
Oh, well, was something else I want to tell you about that we just did one time. You know how that old black dirt mud got to be knee-deep if it rained a little bit, you know? And we were there in the middle of that cotton patch, and you can imagine what it was like. Anyway, Barbara was just a baby, and they had torn, it's when we were building onto the house. So they had torn the roof off. I kept telling him, I said, Bill, it'll probably rain after you get, he had to go to work about 2 o'clock. I said, it'll rain, and then where will we be, you know? He, oh, it's not going to rain. Well, he hadn't been gone an hour to cut loose. And it rained, and it rained, and it rained. And by the time that night, it got dark, and I was moving everything in the house around. I'd move Barbara's, you know, bed out in the middle, and I'd move this around, moving it around, getting dish pans and whatever, putting under all the leaves and everything. And then somebody knocked on the door, and it was dark as pitch, no lights out there, you know, at that time. And it was really, really dark, and it was Swedish, and he had some tarps and things. He said, is it raining? I said, yeah, and I had a big dish pan under the light bulb, you know, over the table in the kitchen where the light was put in. It was just a solid stream, like it's in the river, like, you know, pouring in. And I was having to empty that pan. Well, he crawled up in the top, took those tarps and spread them out and caught that water and got it, you know, stopped it coming. Oh, and it wasn't by my, so that at least had a place that I didn't have to have my head, you know, gripped on or whatever. I never will forget that.
Yeah.
But he stopped that leak. But he thought about it after, you know, he got him work and got to thinking about that.
Yeah. It was small enough that we all were either related, you were close enough, everybody knew everybody's business in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my other things in school was Coach Terry, bless his heart. He did me the greatest thing he ever did. One time, Margie Bates said, hey, let's go get a burger. Well, of course, it wasn't time we were supposed to go get a burger. And I thought, well, hey, sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to get a burger. Well, he had seen me, and what did he do, Mama?
Call me.
Yeah.
He
so I was
me.
No sooner gone than I was missed.
Is Margaret supposed to be at school this morning?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah.
Because I didn't do that.
He said, well, she was here for a little bit, but she's not here now. She's gone.
So I was found out, you know, immediately, and my punishment was Daddy was working in California at the time. That had layoffs here, and he went to California to work sometimes when that happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This was the time when he was out there. And my punishment was to tell Daddy over the phone what I had done. I would have rather taken a beating.
Well, I did give you a pretty good
one. You know, I mean, I would for 100 days. But anyway, that was my punishment, basically.
Then I called.
That's the one I remember.
I took her back to school. Let her out over there, and then I went home and called Coach Terry. I said, I've just let Barbara out at the front door. She's coming back in. I said, I'll beat the tar out of her. You can do what you want to with her.
Now, where did you go to get a burger?
I think we went to Carrollton.
Carrollton?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What year did you graduate?
67.
And, did you graduate from the same building I did? Was it the old thing in the building, or had they built?
Had we? Which? Where did we have ours?
And I believe in the auditorium.
You know, I had the rec the end of my junior year.
Uh-huh.
So there are a lot of things I got through that year, but there are a lot of things that are just gone.
But
I
your
remember
school,
the Dome building. I remember the
But
Dome
so
building.
Your school was what is now Middle School West.
Yes.
It was the new building.
Yeah. Think
so you actually probably graduated in the Dome auditorium, probably. And that was
no. Actually, we were in
the old
gym.
Gym.
I remember graduation itself. Yeah.
So the gym in '67 was in the gym, because I don't think the Dome was built until about '67 or something like that. So it's probably after that in the summer.
Yeah.
Probably.
So the cousins and Janice,
mm-hmm.
I went to theirs in the Dome, but yeah, mine was in the gym.
Yeah. Okay. What was your most important activity and things you remembered in high school?
Oh, goodness. We started out so young with some of our things, you know. Pep Squad was fun for me because I remember, now I can't remember all the names, but I remember one, I called Miss Shockey Aunt Thelma. She looked like my aunt. I called one of the girls on the leader of my line in the pep squad, I called her mama. I was third or fourth grade, I don't know. Uh-huh. It was just a fun, small place. So everything, one thing would lead to another, but we were all so close, basically. Uh-huh. You know, there weren't that many of us.
Yeah.
There was 24 in my class. How many my graduating class? How many was in yours?
About the same.
I couldn't list them all now if I had to.
I can't either.
Which is pretty sad for 24 people.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I liked FHA. I liked everything. It was just...
Yeah, I'm the same way. I tell people there wasn't anything I didn't like about high school.
Yeah.
Of course, kids are completely different.
I like sports.
You know,
I like basketball
different.
A lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just got to do whatever you wanted to do. Basically, you could do it because there wasn't enough. There was too many activities to go around for the amount of kids,
mm-hmm.
even from a small school, that wanted to participate. Because
mm-hmm.
you still have that other handful that just don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
So,
tell me about any memories you have, Barbara, and then you guys will be thinking the same thing. Any further memories you have of the town, the store, the barbershop, Grapevine Springs Park. Any other parts of town you can think of?
Well, I'll tell you, I did not know that wonderful park was down there until we went that time when the big to-do was down there.
Yeah.
I did not know. I went to Linda's house from that end. I knew the peacocks were down back in there,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, we had the big rock things at our end, which was part of our driveway, kind of,
mm-hmm.
The park road. We would, Daddy... when I got my car, when I graduated, Daddy said he was adjusting stuff. He would drive down to the end and back my car or drive it back. But I never went past the fence.
Really?
I just did not go down
there. So you weren't down there as a kid?
I did not know that
hmm.
all existed down there. I knew they called it the Park Road, but,
yeah.
You know,
after the guy from Baptist Foundation took it over, you know,
mm-hmm.
they had no trespassing time.
Yeah.
So that's when everybody lost track.
Yeah.
Lost contact with the
Yeah. And one thing, when Daddy and Sammy Leslie and the ones did the rodeo, the
mm-hmm.
junior rodeo, you know,
yeah.
that was a
talk
big thing.
Talk about that.
Well, Daddy, y'all have to.
You were involved in that, Bill?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you were involved and how all that started and everything.
We was the owners of it.
Okay.
Sam Leslie. And myself.
Mickey Waters.
And Mickey Waters.
And Orangeman.
Dennis Orangeman.
Dennis was the son that died.
Yeah.
Can't think of Daddy's name.
Harold Orangeman.
Yeah.
And we was owners and operators. We bought some animals, but most of them, we'd go down to Sammy Leslie's dairy and load them up and bring them up there and use them for the little kids to ride the calves. And
Johnny Dobeck was in on that too.
Yeah, John Dobeck.
Y'all had to plow out every time, arena and haul in the cattle.
We'd go down and haul the cattle up here, you know, from the dairy in a truck. And one time I remember, I don't remember what he was like a sheriff that saw us down there one night in this big cattle truck moving cattle around down close to the dam on Sandy Lake Road. And he kind of contested us as what we was doing out at this time of the night with these cattle. But it just so happened that we had some of the owners of the dairy with us. But I think he thought he caught some rustlers.
Tell him he's returning what you got later.
Really, we were just taking them back to the pasture after we got through with the kids riding them at the rodeo.
Yeah.
But they spent a lot of hours on the weekends getting ready.
You had to work pretty hard for.
He worked the gate, you know.
A couple of days.
Mama did the concession stand.
I did the stands and the sometimes keeping, you know, up in the crow's nest, keeping time, watching the, you know, I had the clock watch, and I worked more, I guess, in the refreshment stand than anything.
Yeah, how did all that happen, Bill? Whose idea was it? And first of all, what year? Can you remember?
I wish I could, but I can't.
Well, it was going when Barbara graduated from high school. It was going on then, but I don't remember how.
I know when I was around 14, y'all were doing it.
Yeah.
So at 14, that would have been what year?
From 49, to
right in the
mid
60s,
early
60s.
Yeah.
So the mid 60s, it was maybe getting started.
Yeah.
I remember it too, but I don't.
Yeah.
I know, but Bob Parker was keeping their financial stuff. And
so, how did the idea come up?
I don't know.
I don't know. There were a lot of the towns had junior rodeos at that time. There was kind of a little circuit, you know, where they would.
They had their clubs.
Yeah.
Riding clubs and all that.
Yeah.
You know.
So the kids
that
participated.
They had more. It is bigger.
Yeah.
And. But Coppell, I mean, we had a pretty nice little rodeo.
Well, it was there by Mickey Waters.
It was on his land.
Yeah, it was on their land. So.
Yeah. But we built bleachers. Mm-hmm. Had bleachers, you know, for the people to sit.
And was the intention to make money?
It was a non-profit.
Okay.
It was a non-profit organization, and it was real loosely set up.
But you had to put money into it.
There was no.
Huh?
Did you have to put money into it?
We put more work than anything else.
Of course, I took up money.
You donated. You donated a little of this.
Yeah, and the kids, the participants paid to.
And that helped. It helped maintain it.
But it was a non-profit organization.
They never got any money out of it. Nothing out of it. You know, it was just sort of an entertainment for the community.
So it would take care of itself.
So it sustained
itself.
They
made pretty good at state, you know. And of course, they had a lot of expense to it too.
Now, as I remember, it went on for 6-7 years.
I'm going to say somewhere between 5 and 10 years.
Because I worked every Saturday night, and I never, we didn't get paid working to sustain anything. It was the wives, Onita, and Corrine, and. All of us that worked in the stands and did all the extra jobs, like I'd go in wherever I was needed, that's where I worked. They needed me in the stand to work there if I needed timing, or, work the gate a time or two, and just wherever.
And the kids played.
Mm-hmm. It gave a lot of kids something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
they enjoyed.
What nights of the week did it run?
Saturday night.
So you worked to get ready?
All day Saturday. You'd work. All day Saturday,
and
getting the ground
night.
Ready.
Mm-hmm.
Then get the cows back
and
sometime between midnight and daylight.
Yeah, after midnight, we get the cows back in the pasture where they belong.
So it's almost a 24-hour thing to get it ready. And.
But the actual rodeo went from 6, maybe, to?
I'd say 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, well, it started. Way before sundown.
Yeah,
yeah.
We had
before
to be
sundown.
There.
Yeah, it could run like 6
early.
Hours, up to 6 maybe, because some events would take longer. Sometimes there were little special events. And
and then what do you remember when it stopped? Why?
I can't remember.
Why did it stop?
I really can't remember what the reason was for it.
I can't remember the last thing I remember. Well, I know Bob Parker, as I said, kept financial books, and whatever on it. And somehow he had misplaced them somewhere, didn't know where they were. And when we were over there during one of the elections or something, I think Shirley and I was in that room, and we looked at something on the shelf, and it was the rodeo's financial reports that Bob had lost. I guess he probably, he met with them at school, a lot of them at school stuff, and. He probably took them with him, laid them down, couldn't remember where he put them.
But it just sort of died out.
Yeah.
people got kind of tired of it. Even mesquite, you know, kind of died down. It was just a phase or something that people just kind of quit, lost interest in it or something.
Yeah, because at the time there, all the, well, there was just a lot scattered in the whole area.
And there was never any big thing about, you know, just saying we were going to stop it. Or I don't know, just kind of, they just kind of lost interest. You know, I guess got tired.
Yeah.
What other big events or things do you remember when you lived in Coppell? We talked about the Plumley house being moved. Yeah, were you there when it burned?
Yeah.
Were you watching?
Oh,
I think we all were.
I saw that.
All right, Barbara remembers it.
I was coming from Grapevine. I had been to the bank of, after work, I think, or school work. I was coming over the hill. And coming over that hill, it looked like our house. And I went down to the corner, and they said, you can't go down there. And so I went around the other way, and they weren't going to let me through that way. And I still couldn't tell. Smoke, you know, the whole big thing. And I said, I live down there. You can't. Of course they knew me.
Yeah.
I said, I got to get through. So they let me through. But, yeah, it looked like our house.
And I had been watching it come across the field when they come across, you know, then they came out in
the railroad track.
And then come in up there by the railroad and down by our house. I had been watching it all that trip. You know.
I was watching it too.
Yeah.
And I had walked to the backyard, I had walked up the driveway and out to the side of the road there when I looked up and then I saw the fire start. You know,
and how they kept Jimmy, you know, the Harwell house and ours from burning, you know, it's just amazing.
They put their fire trucks up
that those two didn't go up with them.
They never stopped spraying on Frank Sims' house. It was, you know, right in front of it. And it did blister the paint on their garage and whatever.
I remember it destroyed the road. For years after that, the asphalt was kind of messed up.
They had a truck between our house and Frank's and one over on the other side of Frank's. They were really concentrating on
Gosh, I think it was gone in, 30 minutes or something?
It cooked that hot top road.
And it was of course, I remember my parents being opposed to it because it was so large. And we knew that the Plumleys weren't going to keep that house up. Because they had never painted it in. Wasn't it three stories?
Yeah. It's a big house.
They kind of had the big old gables. They were kind of upset, too, as we was them, you know, because they had kind of charge of the church.
Right.
I don't know if you know this or not, but what they wanted to do, they had approached him and maybe some of the others, too. I don't know, but I know they did Wheelers. But they had wanted to bring them around and come in the back way through all that on the back there. And the church, whatever. And Wheelers refused to let them do that.
Really? I didn't know
so
that.
So they had to bring it down the road.
I see.
So they kind of, like, you know, they had to find somebody.
I remember.
Well,
somebody told the story that after the fire, some woman, didn't identify who it was, said, Wheelers Wilson, you ought to be ashamed for whatever, the way you treated.
Know what they finally found was the cause of it. They had taken their lightning rod, you know, they had those old-fashioned lightning rods. They told them to take them off. They took them off and laid them over. They didn't take them loose. They unhooked them from, you know, or somehow, and just laid them down on top of the house.
And then here's a power
line. They said those lightning rods picked up that electricity.
Oh, wow. I remember watching
it.
And you say there were fireworks in it?
That's what they had fireworks stored in there.
Do they sell fireworks?
I didn't know that.
I don't know. I think, I don't know how much they had, but that was one of the things that I heard, that there was fireworks
in
there.
In the house. And of course,
you could hear, part of it, you could hear stuff.
Really? I can remember when that house sat up on the hill, exactly a mile from downtown Coppell. And it's up on the only hill in Coppell.
But that house was big enough that with that lot, the size of it, they could have picked that thing up and set it down in there and still wouldn't have been that much on each side of it. It was so big.
I remember when it was at its original location, that was a very important house. I don't think we've ever known really who built it or anything. Because it was on the hill.
And
it overlooked Coppell. It's a huge, probably the biggest, one of the biggest houses.
It would have been beautiful if they'd have just made arrangements and leave it there.
Whoever built it originally. And I've even seen deeds and in things that suggest that it's quite possible that that place where it was the site of a log cabin that was used as a schoolhouse, church house, probably in the 1870s or something like that. Mm-hmm. That place up there was very important. And then eventually it became Stringfellow property, I think. And,
yeah, it's a shame it's not.
Well, you know, there was a little house set up. Maybe I'm mistaken, but wasn't there a little log house, sort of a rough built house, something, back down there in the field? You know, after going by the old house and down there where that, I guess, the end of that property and the fence. And what was it? There was a couple live back in there, and they adopted two little kids. One of them was black. I know everybody was shocked when they sent them to school.
We had black students at Coffeeville School.
I
don't remember that.
Mm-mm.
I don't remember any black students at Coffeeville School.
Uh-huh. They had a...
Was that before...
Might have been after y'all got out. I don't know.
I don't remember that. I remember the stories.
I don't remember what year it was they adopted those kids.
Heard those rumors too.
Yeah.
Don't know if they were true.
I don't know either.
Okay. Any other? What about other people in town who were your friends? You've mentioned Mickey Waters and Harold Arnsman and Sammy Leslie. Who?
Gilbert Welch.
Gilbert Welch and. What's Gilbert?
Chick
Welch.
Chick.
And who else?
Jig
and
Nora.
So there's S.B. Leslie, Sammy Leslie, and
Onita.
Mm-hmm. And their daughter was Kay, of course. Who else? The Greens. I've forgotten Barbara Green. What about Beverly Hodges? The Hodges.
You mean Wanda and...
Remember, the Hodges lived in a big house on Bethel Road down from us at Park Road.
Albert Hodges?
Yeah, Albert Hodge. Yeah.
And Cleo.
I think so, yeah.
She was Weldon Fondman's sister.
Yeah. You remember the, remember the Ledbetters?
Barely.
I remember the Ledbetter place, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
that
I barely remember. They wasn't there too many years after we moved there, but I don't remember.
There was John and
Mary Lou.
Mary Lou was the daughter.
That's it.
And their mother was, we just called her old lady Ledbetter, but what was her name? I don't remember her name. And then John Ledbetter, and they had a son named John Lewis or something, I think. And of course, she gave me piano lessons. That's how we knew her. And we think, I think he was the brother of the man who built our house, Bluford, I think, but I'm not sure. It was Bluford Ledbetter who built our house. And he had moved back to back to California after building that house for about a year. He didn't like living there. And the story was that my grandfather heard that he was wanting to sell that house, and he came to my father and said, would you be interested in buying this house? And my mother once told the story that she had been in that house, that she went to a bridal shower or a baby shower or something in that house and thought it was the prettiest little house she ever saw. And when it became available to buy, my father bought it for $8,000.
Wow.
I have a copy of the deed.
It was the nicest house around at the time they bought it.
And there was nothing there. There were no trees. Right. I have several pictures of it. No trees, no nothing around it.
Yeah.
It just looked like a little house on the prairie.
Yeah.
You know, we helped Mamie and them move to Allen, up there, Frisco, wherever it is.
Who did?
We did.
Who moved?
Mamie.
Oh, really? You helped them move?
Okay. Yeah.
Back to McKinney?
We made a big day of that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that place growing up.
We had the biggest fun. That was the most fun day.
Well, tell me about that. This is when they moved from Coppell back to McKinney.
Over there for the school, and there was a big house across the school. We helped them move. They moved up there out in the country, you know.
Now, that was sometime around 19...
It was the...
40...
First of the year, I guess, Barbara was born in 49. This was just before she was born. So it would have been...
Been in the year of...
I want to say it was New Year's Day. My mom and dad, that we moved, actually moved them.
Right at the beginning of 1949.
Yeah. Because it was just before she was born in February.
So this is why I was asking how and when they met her, because I always remember Miss Harlan, but I knew that that other place had been hers.
Yeah.
So that's why I was...
So you helped them move up to the house they were living in when
I
was little.
We all cooked something. I would go on a picnic, you know, took food.
Yeah.
And then we had, I don't know how many cars, we all had trailers.
Yeah.
And we went over and we loaded them all up like a strange caravan, you know, went up there. And we had a mattress on Betty and Dub's car. And it blew off of the wind tide going across the dam over there. And the wind caught it and blew it off down, not into the water, but the rocks, you know, it was on the rocks down there. So we all had to pull off. They went down and they carried that mattress back up and put it on top of the car. And Betty and somebody else, I don't remember who, rode on the fenders holding that mattress down. The rest of the way.
That was a long trip to McKinney.
And
on 121.
Oh, yeah.
And Opal was pregnant at the time. And she sat around. She didn't do much. She was always kind of helpless or something. Anyway, she didn't do much. But I climbed up. They were on to me because I was up on top of stuff and hanging curtains, you know, on top of a sewing machine. I don't know what I was on. But anyway, we went in and we mopped, cleaned. We cleaned windows. We cleaned the floors. We put down rugs, carpet, everything that was put down. We washed dishes. We had that for the time we left, that got ready that night to all go home. That house didn't look like it ever been that empty.
Really?
They were ready to, so, you know, it was all there in place, cleaned up, whatever. But we had a whole school, all of us went, you know. And we were all in there pitching, doing whatever needed to be done. So when it came lunchtime, we had a big lunch, you know.
Isn't it interesting how people helped?
Yeah. And now, so many times people find excuses to be busy.
Yeah.
But we hung the curtains and shades and everything that day, you know. I mean, we'll forget that. Mm-hmm.
Well, that, of course, is how I remember my grandparents the most, because we used to go to the McKinney house all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And after they left that house, many years later, I went back and took pictures. They moved the house, and the barn burned.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever owned it had rented the house out, and the barn burned. And the cellar was still there. And I was up there not long ago. Now it's just completely scraped off. Everything's gone.
Yeah.
You can't even quite find how to get there.
Yeah,
anymore.
You can go back to these places now. You can't even locate.
Right.
If they change, you can't even locate the
roads or anything.
Yeah, it's like where Mother grew up. You know, Papa had a country store. And Daddy, Mother and Daddy bought the place from them. And then Mama and Papa moved here to Texas. But Daddy had to tear down the store, and it's a shame it couldn't just be restored and still be there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, somebody was probably going to get hurt there eventually or something else happened. So it just doesn't exist anymore.
No. Tell me, do you remember when the school building burned in Coppell?
I remember it happening. When it burned, but I can't remember what year.
Well, it was 1949.
49.
Yeah, it was over one of the holidays, Thanksgiving, I think, or something. But
yeah,
anyway, what do you remember about it?
Rubenell came along with you in the stroller and got us, and we walked over there that day and looked at it.
Really? After it burned?
Mm-hmm.
I got some pictures of it. So, anything you remember about that? It's just a shell?
Not really.
They rebuilt it the following summer, I think.
Mm.
And it looked pretty much the same.
Yeah, it didn't take long. To redo it. Of course, it wasn't much of a school to start with.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long.
And it was mostly brick, so I think they rebuilt it pretty much the way it looked. Pictures I have, the Historical Society owns some pictures of after it burned, what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what it looked like when we started school, and
yeah.
It's almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture of what it looked like in 1928 when it was new. In the front of it.
1928, that is the year I was born.
That's when they built it. That's when the three schools, Bethel, Gentry, and Coppell, were consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
And they built that building. and it was pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I'll have to remind me, and I'll show you some of my memoirs before you leave, and some of the pictures and things I've got.
As you ask questions, and they recall names, and it's like, and that was the one, you know, relative to this one.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that... There were so many that was related, or was, you know, linked in some way. And then a lot of the people that Mother grew up with in Oklahoma, whites, then I went to school with kids down here. There were quite a few that, you know, congregated in the same area. You don't know.
Yeah, why. But
but they did, so.
I was like my uncle and aunt moving here.
Mm-hmm.
With my... parents. And of course, then my uncle got killed in Louisiana.
And I think he named me?
Dub.
Dub named me?
Dub.
Yeah.
He named you
Bob? He monitored her, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really? How did that happen?
We were just all before she was born when we was talking about,
cutting,
you know,
around playing dominoes
kind of
and he's talking.
Gab session, you know, mm-hmm. trying to figure out a name. And I don't know, he was the one that came in. He came up with one, Barbara Faye, so that's what we chose.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Out of the group.
See, I don't remember my uncle too well. We have home movies, a few home movies of him and pictures, and that's the only way I remember him, because I was, God, I can't remember what year that was. I was pretty young when he was killed.
I can't remember.
Okay, I guess we covered all the kind of the basic names of everybody you remembered in town. What about going to the grocery store in Cabell or the post office? Anything you remember about that?
Well, Clyde Parker was the main one.
Mm-hmm.
That I remember, you know, for so long.
And you had a post office box? Mm-hmm. Like we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole combination.
Seemed like mm-hmm. ours was something 35.
135.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the telephones.
Yeah.
The first telephones. I
remember
Geneva 62635.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like we could all, we didn't have a party line, but we could get on and talk to other, you know, if you like waited so many seconds and everybody called at the same time.
Really?
You could get more than one on the phone at the same time.
Really?
So our first phones were a novelty.
We used to go down to
the
that
first TVs.
The house across from where you live to that house, I can't remember.
Bradshaw.
You go down there to use the phone if you didn't have one.
It was Annie's mama and
yeah.
Joyce.
Yeah.
Mama.
You go down there to use the telephone.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a telephone really early, but it was a crank phone.
Yeah.
And it was a party line.
Mm-hmm.
822. And you two, one long and two short. And then we got the phone that went to Geneva. Ours was 2745.
Yeah.
Jimmy Harville's was 2645. And you only had to dial the last four numbers.
Uh-huh.
And if you wanted long distance, you had to call the operator.
Yeah.
No matter where it was outside of Cabell,
yeah.
It was long distance. I don't remember that. But, you know, Clayton Harville, I interviewed Clayton Harville like this twice in 1988. And she said that there were phones in Cabell as early as maybe 1915, maybe even earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They had. She had. She said when she was a girl, they had the telephone, and she lived down on, you know, where the Miss McDowell lived.
Mm-hmm.
Down
where that
further.
Tree was in the middle of the road.
Yeah, and on down further though, down where the road turned again,
uh-huh.
there was a house there. That's where Clayda grew
and
up.
Miss McDowell, Daddy rode to work with him.
With what was his name?
Rufus.
Rufus
McDowell.
Yeah, they were.
Did he work the same
old.
Place?
Yeah. Yeah, he worked at General
Ray,
Dynamics, too.
Ray, his one of his sons, Ray,
right.
worked, they all wrote.
And Ray them. Still is alive, and we've seen him several times. And then Jack's, I get them mixed up. There's the Kirklands and the Brooks. And anyway, we got a photo album from the Kirklands. And has pictures of Jack when she's about 20 years old. And we got them all on the computer now. They're all digitized and things like that. But anyway, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we should record about Cabell. We talked about the school, the water system, city council and campaigning. We didn't mention the Ottinger's pig farm.
Oh, goodness. No, we didn't.
Anything you want to say about the Ottinger's pig farm? It's kind of a landmark.
Well, there are days that you could definitely tell which way the wind was blowing.
Yeah. yeah.
Some days you could. It was just part of Cabell.
But
yeah.
to me,
part of it.
To me, it was like being home.
Yeah.
Because I grew up on a farm where you had pigs and cows
yeah.
and chickens.
Yeah.
And I mean that smell from the Ottinger pig farm didn't bother me. It just reminded me of home.
I don't remember ever smelling it at our house. But we went to church in Louisville, and you could
mm-hmm.
get halfway between Louisville and Cabell
mm-hmm.
and smell it
mm-hmm.
on a summer night.
Yeah.
And, you know, the smell wasn't the smell from what they fed them.
I think so.
I think it was soured food and
soured
milk and
soured
bread and
corn
and,
corn,
and
corn stuff like that.
That reminds me of Stella was, I was over Stella earlier, and remember Bobby Hollinger? And I don't know who Evelyn was before they married, but she was there. I think yesterday when she's in a real bad way, Stella said she's in a wheelchair and everything.
You know, I get the Ottingers mixed up, but one of the, I think it's Bobby, still lives down off of Sandy Lake.
Somewhere around there because she still comes to.
Jimmy's
in Colorado or somewhere.
Yeah, never did make contact with Jimmy. And Diane?
She's local.
Yeah.
Somewhere local, I think.
And he gave us some pictures and talked about some things here and there. Of course, the Ottingers were always on the other side of the political controversies, along with John Burns. And,
some of them really, I don't know, it didn't bother me. I get asked to smell it sometimes, but I grew up in the country too.
Now, you came much later, so you don't remember anything about the honky-tonks along
Sandy
Lake Road.
I've heard about them. Down about the river.
Yeah, they were all the way down to Sandy Lake.
Down Sandy Lake, close to the river.
And, but they were, there was even one on the corner of Sandy Lake and Denton Tap, and one down at the creek.
I've heard about them, but to my knowledge, they were gone the time we got here.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
I think
we
went in the 40s.
What was the place that ended up being down, what did they call that down there? I know we had Lucky Corner up the other way.
Yeah.
There was
a one called Shot and Elsie's, and the Dew Drop Inn.
I've heard of that. That's familiar.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly enough, I uncover things over the years. I started getting interested in Colville history when I was a freshman in high school. And, you know, Sandy Lake Road was Denton Road. And if you were going out of Dallas to Denton or Louisville, you had to go up Old Denton Road through Carrollton and turn and come up Sandy Lake Road now and turn at Denton Tap and go to that way. And that was Denton Road until they built 35. And then it became known as Sandy Lake Road.
Yeah.
But my father remembers driving to go to Denton to visit my mother. My mother graduated early and was in college at what's now TWU in Denton. Her freshman year, she was only 17 or something, and he would drive up there, and he had to come through Coppell to get there. And of course, they didn't know it was Coppell. But he can remember those honky tonks, and they sold hamburgers. And Uncle James remembers stopping at one. Of course, Uncle James was wild when he lived
he would
here.
Remember.
But he was wild. I interviewed him. He didn't tell me much. He didn't want me to know. I was kind of amazed. I thought he'd be terribly honest.
We did.
He didn't tell you what they come off to pick him up, what trouble he was in or anything.
Well, some of the stuff I did know about.
Dub had to make a trip.
Well, that's what I was telling about them
to get him and bring him back.
Tell me about that.
I don't know much about it, but they had to make a trip to get him.
He was in a jam up,
I'd say in either Kansas or Missouri.
I don't remember where it was they went, but.
And Dub and Wheatus went up and got him and brought him home.
So I imagine he didn't get anything
like that. Well, he didn't initiate anything. He lived here from the time my grandparents moved here until they moved again. And he didn't go to Coppell School because he was already past eighth grade. He went to Carrollton. I guess he graduated. I don't know if he graduated or not. But my aunt, Pat Gee, tells the story. I interviewed her, too. And she said, because she lived with them, she lived with them over at that house. And she said one day, my aunt, we could write a book about, if we knew enough about my aunt, she was Henry English's mistress, and all that. Did you know about all that?
Oh, yeah.
It was very common knowledge.
Yeah.
The family, we called him Uncle Henry, for heaven's sake. But anyway.
He bought a pickup in a 1948 or 49 model pickup, and Dude gave it to Mr. Harlan. It was a nice new Ford pickup.
Really? And she just gave it to him?
Yeah.
I mean, she always drove Cadillacs and things.
Yeah.
And I, even as a kid, I could remember thinking, how did she have all that money? You know. But she, my cousin told the story about Aunt Dude coming out to visit my grandparents mm-hmm. when they lived at the Whittaker place. And she drove her Cadillac out or whatever it was, and she had liquor in the trunk. She had bought some liquor at the liquor store. And Uncle James got in the trunk and stole some liquor and went out and went on a binge. And he said, when I asked him about it, he said there was a hut over, and I think he's talking about over off Bethel Road over in there. And he and some buddies went over there and got drunk in that hut. And he was so bad off that my granddad had to go down there and get him, carry him back. He was like almost unconscious. He had to carry him back home. And he was sick all night, drunk, you know, had a hangover and everything next day. And would you believe they said that the one who got the blame for that was my aunt, not Uncle James.
Dude.
Uh-huh. And he blamed my grandmother. Grandfather blamed her, not Uncle James. And see, I think he got away with everything. Mm-hmm. I don't think my granddad could control him. And I think that's one of the reasons he was as bad as he was, because he didn't control him. But to blame Aunt Dude, because he broke into her trunk mm-hmm. and stole liquor out of it, he blamed her,
yeah.
you know. But Uncle James didn't tell him. And see, you know, Uncle James was in jail, you know, and everything.
I remember.
And I remember visiting him in jail once when I was in high school.
We was down there one time down at your mother and dad's house.
Mm-hmm.
It was out in the garage, and Wheelis was fixing something on a car. I don't remember what it was. But James, of course, he'd make a statement about something, you know, just about any time.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, that is the smartest SOB that ever took a crap between two GI boots that I ever saw in the world.
That was Uncle James?
Yeah, that is Uncle James talking about Wheelis. Talking about Wheelis.
It sounds like
a vision
of your dad.
He meant no harm. He meant no harm by it.
Yeah.
It was a great respectful statement.
Yeah.
That was just the way he, you know, he called an ace an ace.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
But I remember that statement he made. And that was right after Dub and Wheelis had gone up and got him and brought him back.
Yeah.
Brought him back here.
When you twist it all around, it is respectful.
Oh, it is. And the thing is,
he meant,
keep his nose clean for a while, and then he'd go off and do something else.
Yeah. He meant no harm by it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought, I'm sure him and Opal had a lot of problems with each other, whatever. But
you know, I don't think...
She just worshipped him.
I don't think they had much, because she put up with anything.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I was just going to say.
I remember
no matter what happened, in
the old days, I remember one time they were living in Bedford or something. Kids were all grown, not speaking to each other. She'd stay in with him. And he bought her a Cadillac. She had she was very, very proud of that Cadillac. I think it was a Cadillac. And she came home one day, and he had sold it. He just sold it out from under, you know. And who knows for what reason. He used to mistreat her or something.
I know. And she just still follow him around like
just
a little puppy dog.
Yeah.
They lived down here.
I shot him.
Yeah.
Down there by the schoolhouse. Just on the other, right there on Grapevine Creek, right there. They lived down there, right there about, what was his name?
The only place I knew
that. Right there about the Ratliff house. They lived right along there, him and Opal, about the time they got married.
Really?
And
the only place I remember them living was over there across from the Fleet Farm. On Fleet Road.
Yeah.
They lived in a white house on the north side of what's now Sandy Lake, but it was Fleet in those days. And
mm-hmm.
that's the same place my parents lived when they first moved here, across the street. Where the Browns lived.
Yeah.
Remember Sandy
mm-hmm.
Brown? It's across the street from there.
From
there,
okay. Well, they lived in there. We went over one time and went across there to visit. Was that when James Noble lived there? And it was in Ratliff's, the big house.
It might have
and
been.
And the little one that Dorothy and him lived in was kind of set back.
Yeah.
You know, but that bigger house that
yeah.
on the road there next, right next to them.
But I know James was talking down there one day about when him and Opal got married. He said, you know, that every time that I'd get ready to make love to her, it took me forever to get her house broke, that she'd go jump in the back of the car. Yeah, said it took me forever to get her
house broke.
Yeah, we don't need any more
of that. Well, and I'm telling you, his two daughters won't speak to him, and they don't let anybody in their family speak to him, and none of the grandkids. I don't think he's had any contact with them for years. And you know what? I mean, one of my stories is that hadn't been that long ago. It's been a number of years. We got word that he had had a heart attack and was in a hospital in, I think it was Bedford, and we rushed over there. And when we got there, the doctor came out and said, he's refusing to stay in bed. He's pulling all the needles out and all the tubes out, and he's leaving. And I went, let him go.
I did.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and he's still alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably wasn't a hard time.
Yeah. Well, it was, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Kept
going,
yeah.
I mean, but he means well. It's interesting, as much trouble as he could cause in the family, he means well. He looked after my aunt. You know, my aunt died. Aunt Dave died very, really under tragic circumstances. She was 93 or something. She was living in a house on just off Skillman that Henry had bought her, and she was getting old, and he sort of looked after her, and she always hired somebody to come in and look after her, and eventually she hired somebody to live with her, but most of the time it was just somebody who would come in and clean house and fix her something and look after her, and we didn't know, none of the family knew it, but Uncle James found out they were robbing her, and they had written forged checks and had taken everything she had out of the bank. One day the bank called him. He had signing privileges on her account, but he had never used it. One day they called him and said, Mr. Harlan, somebody's here trying to close out this account, and your name's on it. And he went down and all the money was out of it. They had stolen her title to her house.
Yeah.
They owned her house and everything. And he was able, you know, he was always litigious, you say, litigious lawyers and everything, and he managed to get her house back, but she barely had enough money when she died. He barely had enough of her money left when she died to bury her.
Oh, goodness.
That's how bad it was.
Something.
Well, I imagine that was quite a bit at one time.
At one time.
Somebody went through
it. You know, she
bit.
Tried to sue Henry English's estate to get some of his, because he had always promised her.
Yeah.
Substantial amount of money. He said, your money's in a box. And he died under kind of suspicious circumstances. And she's seating, there was an article in the Dallas News that Pat gave me. And the judge threw it out because it was past the time that she could file a suit against her, but her name's in the paper and everything, you know. And I remember seeing him four or five times in my life. And just the fact, I mean, our family was very conservative religiously and everything. And from the time I was old enough to know what was going on, it was very open who Henry was and that he was married and that she, you know, she was with him and that he was paying for everything and bought her a house on La Vista and an apartment next to it so that she got the rent from the apartment house and lived on that and that he bought her another house.
I hardly remember not knowing that stuff.
Yeah. I knew it at the earliest age.
Henry English.
Yeah. And, you know, James.
He started out, he had that English truck line.
Yeah.
That was Henry English.
Red Ball Freight.
Yeah, English truck line, and he went on up to Red Ball Freight.
I don't know if it's their first car or not, but they had I think it was a brand new Ford.
Who was his?
Betty and Doug.
Uh-huh.
That they got through, Henry had got it pretty cheap for them.
Oh, he could do anything.
Yeah.
And he got Uncle James' his first job down there.
Mm-hmm.
Down there, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about working for Henry English. And anyway. Well, is there anything else that we should talk about in the last 2 minutes here? Anything I've forgotten that you can think of?
I can't think of anything.
We pretty well covered it all.
If I thought of anything, I would have probably told
that
you.
That has been running through my mind are our great parades in Coffeeville.
Oh,
we
had great parades, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
They were very important, weren't they?
Yeah, everybody was kind of had to be in it.
That's right. Wasn't anybody to watch it.
No.
I remember somebody riding a lawnmower.
Mr. Scott.
I was just fixing to say, I remember
Mrs.
him
Scott
riding
the lawnmower
in
that parade.
Yeah. Parades were important.
Mm-hmm.
We still have them. July 4th and Christmas.
Yeah,
okay. Still have them.
Y'all all had floats to make.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
we ran our float through the Corbin's garage.
Mm-hmm.
1 year.
Did you?
I saw it. In fact, in the last day or two, I saw Coppell on the news. And they was talking about North Lake over here building. They're going to do a lot of building around North Lake.
Yeah.
And said North Lake is in the city of Dallas.
Right.
They came out the road, if you remember. They came out the highway and come down to the where the lake is and went around that lake and then went back down the road back to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But that lake was in Dallas.
Yeah. Still is.
It is North Dallas, but it's really in Coppell.
Yeah. Causes all kinds of problems.
And it's,
mm-hmm.
That's one of the first lakes built up on the hill away from the rivers and streams and whatnot, but it's built up on the hill.
Yeah.